Wednesday morning broadcast here at the Nahum Segal Network. We have been very anxious since the start of all this, since Shmini Atzeres, to speak with our dear friend, Rabbi Josh Fass, co-founder of Nefesh B'Nefesh, and somebody who has a unique perspective on things always. And we have an additional bonus. In addition to Rabbi Fass, this morning he is joined in Israel, as he has been since Shmini Atzeres, since Matzah Yontif, I should say, by the great Tony Gelbart, meaning Rabbi Fass's co-founder. They are co-founders of Nefesh B'Nefesh, as many of you in this audience certainly know. So Rabbi Fass is with us. Tony Gelbart, who I mentioned off the air a moment ago, I mentioned to him that those who dropped everything to leave after Simchas Torah and get to Israel will be remembered for that act and will inspire a people, for, in my opinion, for generations to come. I have proof of that from what happened in the Yom Kippur War 50 years ago, but that's not for now. Rabbi Yehoshua Josh Fass, a pleasure to welcome you back to JM in the AM.
Thank you so much, Nachum.
And Tony, I take this opportunity to welcome you as well. Kol hakavod to you. Welcome back to JM in the AM.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Rabbi Fass, we're going to do this in a little bit of a different order, if you don't mind, because as much as we need to speak to you about the last 12 days and the shock that everybody living in Israel were thrust into on Shmini Atzeres, I think it's important to start with the news of the day, especially from the seat that you sit in, being so connected to the government of Israel and working alongside so many people in the effort to facilitate Aliyah from North America. With all that in mind, and of course you're a Native American, meaning you are originally from the United States. With all that in mind, what are your thoughts today as you saw, and I assume most people in this audience saw, President Biden arrive in Tel Aviv, hug the prime minister, make very positive statements about the support that the United States is ready to give to Israel, acknowledge Israel's account of what happened yesterday in Gaza regarding the hospital? I thought he would avoid the topic completely. I thought it was remarkable that he acknowledged it. And frankly, those of us who are skeptical that this visit may not be at the right time and might be a mistake in general, I think those of us who felt that way are coming around somewhat on this issue. What's your reaction to what's happening today in Israel diplomatically?
I think there have been constant mixed emotions. I think the last 11 days, and we can talk about this a little later, we're constantly struggling, at least I know I am personally, with constant mixed emotions. And I think today as well, it's an unprecedented embrace. It's an unprecedented expression of solidarity, which is remarkable, which I think every Israeli needs that hug, because every Israeli is walking around as if they're in Shiva and mourning. Like a constant, sustained, prolonged Yom HaZikaron. So it is amazing to feel that embrace. There's an undercurrent of fear of what's next. On the other hand, there's this perspective of that this is a much bigger situation, that it's a geopolitical situation. It's a broader macro picture of what's happening in the Middle East. And that's sobering. So again, we're constantly mixing emotions of that support and the embrace, but that expression of solidarity, of having the carriers in the water, of having Syria on one side, Iran backing Syria, what's happening in Gaza, it's sobering to know that this is not a one-time act, but it's a representation of a full geopolitical shift. And for me personally, it's a lot to digest. But it's remarkable to see a first time an American president coming to Israel in time of war and to express certain statements that are very much needed, and especially that he raised the concept of the hospital, because that could have been fire to all anti-Israel sentiment. But I'm sure Tony has some words on that.
Tony, what's your reaction to all this?
Yeah. Look, I think you can clearly say, and his visit here demonstrated a few things. One, in today's age, and certainly we all understand how technology works. He could have simply done a Zoom or a Microsoft video shot or something, you know, a live feed, and he could have done the same thing. I mean, he could have any message that he wanted to give. But it's not just the president giving a message; it's the entire United States and the people in the United States. So, but here's the bottom line. I think his visit was done to be here in person to show not just the unity, but it's a war not against just Hamas, but it's a war good versus evil. And that's the bottom line. We saw just pure evil, and the world was shocked. And I even think some of our enemies were shocked. And meaning enemies of the United States and enemies of Israel, because that's the brutality that's very rarely seen, if ever. So I have to just say that I think that the message, he could have easily done it electronically. But I think it was just amazing because you had Secretary of State Blinken here. Yeah. And you had Secretary of Defense Austin here. So that was a message all in itself. But here comes the president in time of war, as Rabbi Fass said, and the message was clear. I've got your back. We have your back. And that's a pretty strong message.
Tony Gelbart, Rabbi Josh Fass with us from Israel, co-founders of Nefesh B'Nefesh. There's so much to talk about of the last 12 days. Josh, I have to start with the soldiers. You, your family, obviously every family in Israel, I would argue the majority of families in the diaspora have in some way been somewhat directly affected by all this, obviously in Israel much more so, but we all know somebody, we're all related to somebody. Everyone feels the pain, as you said, a brilliant way of putting it, the extended Yom HaZikaron. Everyone feels the pain of those families who've lost relatives, the families of the wounded, and certainly the families of the abducted, with whom we continue to sympathize, and we won't let anybody forget over 200 hostages that are being held in Gaza. But let's start with the soldiers. You have a unique relationship with lone soldiers. We have discussed this at length for years and years as we've been on those flights with lone soldiers who drop everything in order to continue their lives in Israel and join the army immediately. Obviously, some of them have fallen in this. Obviously, you're in touch with many of them, and certainly there's a level of loneliness because their family is not in Israel that they encounter all the time, but now it must be much more profound. What could you tell us about the experience of the soldiers and those who are going through this since the start of the war?
It's a lot to share. At any one time, you know that we're the outsourced arm for the IDF for caring for lone soldiers from around the world. So at any one time, we have around 4,000 lone soldiers from over 60 countries. And since they called up the reserves, we have around 10,000 lone soldiers from our program that are in active combat today.
Wow.
And since the war started, we have 6 of our lone soldiers who are in captivity, who have been captured. We have 5 that are hospitalized in bad shape. And we've had 11, Rahmana, that have been killed. The care for the families and for the Chayalim is extremely intense, for the soldiers, extremely intense and emotionally heart-wrenching. And we actually created teams here at Nefesh, a team that goes to the Shiva houses, a team that goes to the funerals, a team that visits the hospitals, and a team that deals with the families that their children have been captive. It is it's heart-wrenching on our side as a service provider. It's heart-wrenching being in touch with hundreds and hundreds of families and parents who are sick to their stomach with worry. So we're giving them support 24/7, a hotline giving them a direct line to the IDF. We've been holding multilingual Zooms with IDF commanders to share with them some news so that at least they feel connected. On two for the English community. We did one last night for Russian parents. We had 350 Russian parents on a Zoom with that we organized and coordinated. We're about to launch in next week. You'll see it. We're going to launch free flights for parents who need to come here to visit their child or to be here, especially for those who have been injured. So there's a lot. And there's inspiration. I mean, we see these young men and women who are so galvanized, so spirited, so heroic, so charged, so unified to fight for their country more than ever. So you have, again, duality of emotion. On one side, you are heartbroken of what's happening and what you need to do when this new mode and shift of servicing. And then you're just so inspired by the will and the determination and the strength and the Zionism and fervor of these soldiers.
I just want to make a couple of points, which are obvious, but I want people to understand the perspective. So you've welcomed people from foreign countries who've come to Israel literally to bury their children. I mean, you have been at these funerals with lone soldiers' families who I would assume had come to Israel, and this was, you know, their first experience in Israel was to bury their children.
We had one family, French family, that their son came to Israel a couple of years ago, and through experience became religious and became a lone soldier and was killed. And our team went to the Shiva a couple of times. And his mother was like, I get it now. The embrace of this country and the love, we understand its passion, we understand its connectivity. There have been heart-wrenching stories. Yeah. We've been involved. Tony's been involved. We've been involved in things that you would have never imagined that Nefesh staff will be involved in. It's been difficult.
So when the lone soldiers, when they make the decision to go to Israel, and again, you've had this experience a million times. I've seen it somewhat when I speak to them as they're traveling to Israel. They have this incredible enthusiasm to defend the land. They have this amazing mission in mind. Even if they grew up in L.A., New York, Chicago, or Tulsa, they have this amazing mission in mind that they're going to protect Jews all around the world by being a member of the Israel Defense Forces. That attitude, that enthusiasm to defend the Jewish people, which we thought maybe they'd be second-guessing themselves because now they're in the throes of a serious war. Maybe they'd be saying to themselves, my gosh, what did I get myself into? You're saying to me and to us just the opposite. That enthusiasm to defend and protect the Jewish people is just as high as when they originally were on this mission. And in addition to that, they are at a state of morale and a state of inspiration that they are actually inspiring those around them.
It's not just lone soldiers. It's the entire nation. Tony just showed me a picture, and I'll have him share. They woke a lion, and they unified the country.
Look, let's go back just a couple of seconds. I was thinking about what you said before, Nachum, but you see, in my opinion, Hamas made two major mistakes. One of them was they started this action and did this horrific event, okay? Horrific. They started this war. They started this in the most brutal way. So by doing that, just by starting it and doing what they did, they sealed their own fate. They thought they were going to grow. They're dead, okay? They're finished. They're not going to exist anymore. The second thing they did was unfortunately, they did something so horrific that you saw before all this happened, before this war started, before all this happened, you all know that the Jewish nation was in turmoil. And every time people tried to bring it together, it was going further apart. The left, the right, you know, pro, anti, democracy, whatever it is. It was split. And what these Hamas did was absolutely 100% unify the country. There's a picture floating around the internet of a bunch of soldiers, Israeli soldiers, their faces blacked out, and basically each one of them are holding a word or so. And basically the word is, we are, and it's very careful what they say, and I don't know if I'll get it correct, 100% correct, but we are the soldiers of the Jewish nation from the right and from the left. And we are not removing our uniforms until the destruction of Hamas.
Are both of you, I mean, Josh, obviously you've been in Israel, you live there, and Tony, as we said, you've been there since the end of Yom Tov. Are both of you aware of this unity in the diaspora as well? In Israel, as it's been described to us, and as both of you just told us, it's off the charts. Are you aware that diaspora Jewry has come together like never before?
Oh, absolutely.
100%. We see it. We feel it. 100%.
It's absolutely remarkable.
Not from your audience. You and your audience, I can assure you, have been so immensely involved in sending packages and helping in any way, shape, or form. I can't tell you how many doctors have volunteered, how many people want to come over, how many people are here, how many people are doing this thing. So, yeah, we're aware of it, and all of Israel is aware of it.
Also, there's a major battle on the front here, as you know, when it comes to social media, when it comes to news organizations, when it comes to fighting the good fight in those types of forums, and a lot of people are getting involved, thank God. Josh Fass, Tony Gelbart, both with us live via telephone from Israel. All right, Rabbi Fass, we have to get to, you know, what you are most known for. I'm so curious, as our people listening right now, many people have planned on making Aliyah in 2023, beyond that as well. Have Aliyah flights continued? What have you heard? What would be a good example or a good story to tell us about those from North America who now, as crazy as it might sound, have made a commitment to immediately get to Israel on a permanent basis? What could you tell us about this?
Two anecdotes. Tomorrow morning at 6:15 in the morning, I'm driving to Ben Gurion Airport. And at the airport, we're going to greet 24 North American Olim who are arriving.
Unbelievable.
Amongst us whole part. That's number one. Number two, last night, we had a phone call from someone who was on a flight 2 days next week on Sunday and said, do you need me to get off the plane? And we wanted to figure out if he was looking for an excuse to, you know, to push off his flight or to defer, which is completely understandable and justifiable. And he was like, "No, I want to still make Aliyah. It's been my dream, and even more so, I've been so fervently connected, and I want to be in my homeland." He said, "I would just give up my seat if you had a reservist soldier who needed to get to Israel, and I'm willing to push off my Aliyah and to live on my suitcases the next 2 days." If it means that you need to give my seat to a soldier.
Yeah, the stories from the planes, the stories from the airports, all these accounts are just remarkable. And as you just reiterated, or at least confirmed for us, yes, there are people even this week, including tomorrow morning when you'll greet them at Ben Gurion Airport, who have decided to continue their Aliyah mission, their journey, and for many of them, they'll be arriving in Israel literally in the middle of a war. The whole thing is pretty remarkable, frankly. Tony, I mentioned earlier that you dropped everything, went to Israel. Recalling for me, you know, those who've dropped everything and gone to Israel during very difficult times, I would imagine that it must have given a boost to everybody you've seen there. I'm sure it's given a boost to yourself as well. We know how that works. What made you drop everything, go immediately, and do what you did?
Well,
I didn't give it a second thought. I was walking to shul on Shabbat in the morning early, and someone came up to me and said, "Did you hear what happened?" Of course, I said I didn't hear anything. And I immediately turned around and started literally running to my house. And somebody who saw me said, "Is everything okay?" And I just kept running to my house. And I did what I needed to do, and I got here as fast as I could. And it's true that, you know, when your friends and family are in need, whether you can help a little or you can help a lot, just showing up sometimes makes the difference.
Well, I could tell you based on a text that I received that Rabbi Fass and those that you work with in Jerusalem were touched, to say the least. Rabbi Fass, can you confirm that it meant a lot when Tony showed up?
Chuck, we've been in the office the day after Yontif, or day and a half after Yontif, every single day. And very few people have been able to come in. Either some are scared to travel with the rockets, or their spouses are in the army. We have so many of our own staff that are actually in active combat, and I worry about them every single minute. So we've had very few people in the office, a lot of people working remotely. And every day, as more and more people come and they see Tony just here, and he actually has been living in my office. We set up a second desk in my office, like roommate here. People start to cry. People just break down crying. Everyone's on the verge of crying anyway. You just have to open your mouth to another Israeli. No matter how macho and bravado we have, every Israeli starts to tear. We've all cried more than we could possibly imagine the last week. And to have an Abba or to have our brother here with us is really remarkable. I wouldn't expect anything less from Tony, but it's been extremely moving that we're not doing this alone. We've been, some of the conversations that you can just hear, and some of the services and some of the situations that we're dealing with are so, so challenging. And just to have Tony in the room, just to be able to bounce off the ideas and also to give us comfort when we're dealing with such horrors, has been really, really comforting for us.
Unbelievable. JM in the AM with Rabbi Fass and Tony Gelbart, co-founders of Nefesh B'Nefesh. Rabbi Fass, there are a lot of people who want to know if they can make a practical difference, and they turn to you. Even if it may not be your area generally, they turn to you for advice there. I mean, again, kudos to the Hatzalah members, EMTs, et cetera, that have figured out how to get there, and they've coordinated with the network of EMTs around the world that are affiliated with our communities, and we know that they are doing quite a job over there. But there are medical personnel, there are doctors from this area who wonder if they could be of help in Israel, Rabbi Fass. There may even be others. I don't know. Are there other areas of expertise that's needed now in Israel that might benefit from a group that comes from the United States? It's very possible. But what would you say to those doctors who feel they could add to the assistance of other doctors in Israel at this time and free up, other hands while they take on certain responsibilities, and other people who feel that they have a skill that could be helpful in Israel right now?
I'm so, so glad you raised the issue. There is or may be a need for reinforcements from the medical professional world. We are an agent of the Ministry of Health. And Tony and I have been sometimes the only civilians in war room situations, war room meetings of the last week. We have been tasked, along with the Ministry of Health, to assemble a list of physicians, of volunteer physicians from around the world that are willing to jump on a plane and a notice. We have around 650 physicians from America. The Ministry of Health in total, including our 650, 5,000 physicians, surgeons, physicians from around the world who are willing to get on a plane at a moment's notice to help Israel now. What they're doing, and the last thing to do is to coordinate a group and getting on a plane and coming here, because you're not going to get licensed and you're not going to be placed. the system is very, very straightforward, and they need to have an order, an organized fashion to this, or else it'll be chaos, and it won't be a help to the situation, but actually be detrimental to the situation. The Ministry of Health has a huge list, this database. When a hospital, clinic, army base, whatever needs surfaces, the Ministry of Health is going to look through this database for the right doctor. The doctor then, that name, will be sent over to the Ministry of Immigration or Absorption, and they, with us and the Jewish Agency, will coordinate the logistics of that person's flight, hospitality, licensing, and their match to the hospital and clinic. It has to be done this way, because otherwise they'll just be not placed, twiddling their thumbs, not licensed to work here in Israel. So it's a very, 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 very straightforward process to this. It is working already. Already 11 physicians have been handpicked and selected by the Ministry of Health that we have and are helping here that have landed over the last couple of days. And there are more to come. And it's based very, very specific, based on the specific needs of what the country needs.
So it sounds like if one has that skill and they just contact Nefesh B'Nefesh, this is what it sounds like to me, they'll be led in the right direction to do what you just described.
100%. Literally every day I send out a link multiple times of just starting the process of registering to be on the list. Let it register on the list, start the licensing documentation so you have it, so that the Ministry of Health knows how you're licensed, what your degree is, what your proficiency of Hebrew is, so that they can make the match if necessary.
You go to the Nefesh website and you put in your information there.
Or they can reach to you, Nachum, and you can send them to me through my WhatsApp, and I can communicate with a doctor on a personal basis.
Yeah, anybody out there, if you want to just start a conversation with me via text, via email, etc., we'll obviously send you in the right direction. And God bless those who could, the thousands who are willing to go to Israel at this point. Finally, Josh, I don't know if it's I don't know if it's worthwhile to recount everything from that day, from Shmini Atzeres morning, but you're in a community, plenty of Anglos, plenty of Israelis, plenty of children, plenty of grandchildren, plenty of parents, plenty of grandparents, etc. What is it like now in your community? Is it a lonelier feeling in synagogue because so many reservists have been called up? Are the women in our community, or specifically yours, because you see this firsthand, are they going through an incredible challenge because their husbands are away and the fathers are not around? What could you tell us about the average community in Israel and what each of them is going through at this time?
In many places, it's ghost town. All of our sons are not there. There were three homes out of 20 homes on our block, myself included, because I have a lot of daughters, where the entire Simchat Torah, Shmini Atzeret, Shabbat, cars up and down, jumping in cars in their Shabbos clothes, running to their bases. It was a mass exodus of doctors, of soldiers, of our youth, and we haven't seen them. Many places, and we're sitting in Yerushalayim right now. There's no cars, no traffic. It's empty. And everyone is coming together to support one another and care for one another. But it's the nerves and the fear and the concern is palpable. And we're all dealing with our own trauma and process trauma. For the first time that I saw my grandkids a few days ago, I broke down crying. I couldn't look at them without crying, knowing how many children have been taken from us. Barely can eat because there are so many images that we've seen that Tony and I have been exposed to the last few days that make you literally sick to your stomach. And at night, quite honestly, I think it's hard for all of us to sleep here, to sleep. Either we're fearful or we're concerned or worried, sick. or we just show survivor's guilt, where we, why should we be able to get into pajamas and put our head on a soft pillow when there are 500,000 soldiers sleeping on the dirt someplace throughout the country, ready to protect us and defend us? So that's what we're all feeling, in a sense.
Yeah. But I think on the flip side to that, there's also an immense sense of determination and support for each other here, civilians and military. Yeah. Everyone is really supporting each other in a pretty strong way. So there's pride in the nation. There's pride in the Army. There's determination to finish this job and go forward.
I've never been prouder of this country. I've never been prouder to be a Jew. To see just, it is gorgeous and stunning. The unity, the love, the concern, the mitzvot, it's just unbelievable. Mikam Chai Yisrael, there is no other nation on the globe that responds this way, that acts this way, as if it's everyone's brother, everyone's child.
Can't thank you both enough. Netzach Yisrael lo yishaker. I'm Yisrael Chai, and I look forward to reuniting with both of you in the holy city of Jerusalem. God bless both of you, and stay safe, and best regards to your families.
Thank you so much, Nachum. Be well.
Rabbi Josh Fass, Tony Gelbart from Israel, co-founders of Nefesh B'Nefesh. Boy, if we are inspired by the morale of the Israeli army, how can you not be inspired by the words of those two gentlemen as they describe what's going on, the type of work they're involved with now on a daily basis, in addition to what they normally do for the future of the Jewish people, and the way they describe what our brothers and sisters in Israel are going through. By the way, on a technical note, again, any doctor, skilled worker, or physician who feels they could be of help in this time, just be in touch with us, my email or text. Obviously, anybody at Nefesh B'Nefesh, as Tony pointed out, on the website, you can make contact and start the process really easily, nbn.org.il, and kol hakavod to everybody who's running to get to Israel and participate in all of this as soon as possible.